All right, this is Arab Talk on KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. It's Arab Talk, and this is Jess Ghanem here on the board. We're actually very fortunate to have with us today Professor Angela Davis. Professor Davis is Professor Emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz. She is published, obviously, extensively. Her most infamous works, I would say, are Women, Race, and Class, published in 1980, Women, Culture, and Politics, 1988, Our Prisons, Obsolete, 2003. She's a writer, activist, and educator, and is currently an emeritus professor at UC Santa Cruz. Angela, thank you very much for being with us today on Arab Talk.
Thank you for inviting me.
And also with us is Professor Gina Dent, also professor at UC Santa Cruz in the Feminist Studies Department at UC Santa Cruz. Gina, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Well, this is with everything that's happening in Palestine recently, with the flotilla that was stopped from Greece on its way to Gaza to break the illegal siege in Gaza, together with the flotilla, in addition to the recent law passed by the State of Israel, essentially outlawing and making it illegal to speak of boycotting, nonviolent boycotting against Israeli settlements, the situation in Palestine has been front and center in the media. More recently, a international delegation of indigenous women and of color and feminists came back from a delegation in Palestine. Leading that delegation in part were Professor Davis and Professor Dent. So, Angela, I would very much like to get your sense of what it was like to go to Palestine and the context for the statement.
Well, no, first of all, we felt as women of color, scholars, activists, artists, indigenous women, that it would be important to offer solidarity to Palestinian people in the ongoing struggle for a free Palestine. I can say that personally, I have looked forward to such a trip for many years. I've been involved in one way or another with the Palestine Solidarity Movement since I was an undergraduate. So this was an especially important moment for me to participate in this collective effort to bring solidarity from communities of color, especially from communities of color and indigenous communities, but from progressive people in the U.S., especially since the U.S. is the major supporter of the coercive and repressive policies of the State of Israel that are responsible for so much pain and suffering in Palestine.
Were you at all, based on being a solidarity activist with Palestine for many, many years, you had an idea of what to expect. How was that in comparison to the reality of what you saw?
Well, you know, this is something that I'm striving to communicate to people with whom I've been speaking about this trip. As a long-time solidarity activist, I thought I knew. I have been to South Africa. I was in South Africa before the fall of apartheid. I've been to Northern Ireland. I've been to other countries where repression is overt. And so I thought I had an idea of what I would discover in Palestine. However, for me and for all of the members of our delegation, it was such an incredible shock every day. We spoke to each other about the fact that we had no idea it was so horrendous.
This is really surprising. I mean, when you look at the list of the people who actually went, I mean, and it's an impressive list, and it includes obviously you, Professor Davis, Professor Dent, G. Melissa Garcia, Anna Romagna, Beverly Guy, Sheftel, Pamela Nadinson, Barbara Aransky. I mean, it's an impressive list of women of color, feminists and indigenous women, and to actually go and be surprised about what you see, given that this is a group profoundly informed, you know, in terms of reading about the struggle. That's a surprising statement to hear.
Well, I think we all expected it to be really bad, but we had no idea that we would feel as if we were inside a prison. As we say in our statement, one of the Palestinian colleagues we met said that occupied Palestine is the largest prison in the world. Everywhere we went, we saw the wall, we saw the razor wire. It, as a person who's been involved in anti-prison activism for many years,
yes,
it really felt as if the whole country was the target of the technologies of incarceration that are used in prison.
In case you joined us a little bit late, we're speaking with Professor Angela Davis. Professor Davis, together with a large delegation, just returned from Palestine. They issued a very strong statement. It's a call to action from indigenous and women of color feminists. Let me switch a bit and ask Professor Dent about her experience in Palestine. Gina, how was it for you? And same question as I put to Angela. You knew what's going on there. How did that jive with the reality of what you saw?
Well, I would echo what Angela just reported, and it was really a topic of conversation amongst the delegation. The conditions there were far worse than what we expected. I think what we thought that we would find would be the kind of racism that we've come to understand from the United States and from other places, which is often very hard to describe and increasingly not understood as an institutional racism, or something that which is structured into society. But it was a blatant violation of human rights at every turn, and it was so obvious, and it was delivered with such harsh treatment that it was hard for us to really understand what we were seeing. And so we'd spent some time talking about this, and I think I also had expected a lot. I had studied with Edward Said. I have a Palestinian member of my family. I have spent many years learning about this issue, and I wanted to go to Palestine for a long time. But it was a great surprise. I would also say, though, that it was a surprise on the other end. I mean, we were surprised to find that the universities had such advanced curricula, and we were astounded to find the level of literacy amongst especially young people, and the resistance culture there was so developed that it was really astonishing also to see that. So we were both struck by the violence of the occupation and by the organization of the resistance and the way in which it's interwoven through every part of daily life.
I just want to take a moment and share with our listeners a quote from the statement that was issued by the delegation, and then I'm going to ask Angela and Gina to comment on this. It said, "Each and every one of us, including those members of our delegation who grew up in the Jim Crow South, in apartheid South Africa, and on Indian reservations in the U.S., was shocked by what we saw. In this statement, we describe some of our experiences and issue an urgent call to others who share our commitment to racial justice, equality, and freedom." So, Professor Davis, are you actually, you think that it's a legitimate reference to Jim Crow South Africa, apartheid South Africa, Jim Crow America, apartheid South Africa, and the Indian reservations, which we still experience in this country? It's a legitimate connection?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the points that we made to each other was that it was actually worse than what we had experienced in the Jim Crow South. And in many ways, although we don't want to create hierarchies of oppression,
mm-hmm.
but it was, as Gina was pointing out, the blatant character, the existence of this repression that was not in any way nuanced or concealed, to be able to see highways that were designated for Jewish settlers only inside Palestine, to see the signs that said only authorized vehicles allowed to walk down a street in Hebron, where at one point Palestinians were required to walk up a staircase and to walk down a path overlooking the street because no Palestinian pedestrians were allowed on that portion of the street, to be constantly subject to the military and the soldiers, the young Israeli soldiers with carrying these huge machine guns with their fingers on the trigger. It was stunning. I can't get those images out of my head.
We're speaking with Professor Angela Davis, who just returned with a delegation from Palestine. She's sharing her experiences. We'll be talking later about the statement that was posted on an action from Indigenous and Women of Color feminists. Angela, I have to share with you that I'm still in a little shock that we have two of the most, informed, politically active feminists, in the United States, and you're talking to our listeners and to me about being surprised about what you saw in Palestine. Can you offer some sort of analysis, structural or otherwise? How is it that it you're speaking still from the point of surprise about what you saw in terms of, an appreciation of what you read on the media or see on the media, or are your appreciation of how Palestine is articulated in the narrative here in the United States?
Well, I suppose I would explain our shock by pointing out that we're all very much affected by prevailing ideology. Mm. Even those of us who consider ourselves progressive and radical have been influenced by the failure to acknowledge the crimes of the state of Israel. The power of Zionism is so strong in this country that the media we generally count on to get our information from never present the kinds of descriptions that would allow those of us here to develop a visual sense of what is happening in Palestine. I think that if more people understood the conditions under which Palestinians are compelled to live, they would speak out. And I think, as Gina pointed out, what was also very shocking and inspiring was the extent to which the freedom movement has retained its resilience and its vitality. And we were thinking about parts of the country and parts of the world where poverty is a problem, and you can see the evidence of that everywhere. You see little kids begging on the streets. You see people who obviously have been shut out of the entire society. In Palestine, we didn't see that kind of evidence of poverty. Rather, we experienced people who were focused so much on their collective freedom. We experienced people who were so much more interested in education than anywhere else I've seen, and the sacrifices that families would make in order to guarantee that their children would get an education. So on the one hand, as Gina pointed out, it was the material circumstances that was such a shock. But on the other hand, what has not been communicated is the force and the power and the strength of the resistance movement.
So then in comparing what since, obviously you've written extensively on this in your career, and when you compare what you observed and saw in Palestine on this visit, and you compare it with the trajectory of the takedown or of the dismantlement of apartheid South Africa or of the attempt to dismantle Jim Crow America, where is Palestine right now?
Well, I would say, first of all, I think that the BDS campaign is extremely extremely important.
Boycott, divestment, and sanction? Yes.
Boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. The fact that Israel, the Knesset recently passed legislation that in effect criminalizes the strategy of boycott is an indication of the fact that the boycott movement has acquired major influences all over the world. So I think that this is a strategic moment. You might compare it to the moment preceding the release of Nelson Mandela in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
When the international campaign began to grow and grow, when basically they were forced to release Mandela before the downfall of apartheid, of course.
Mm-hmm. That's the voice of Professor Angela Davis. She's speaking about her recent trip to Palestine. And I want to just now ask Professor Dent about, you know, frequently when social justice activists or progressive academics use the word apartheid Israel, mm-hmm. we're criticized because mm-hmm. Frequently the criticism is, well, it's not the same, you know, it's not... Technically speaking, we hear frequently that that's an inappropriate use of the word apartheid. Mm. How would you respond to that kind of criticism?
Well, I had heard that criticism a lot before I left. And so it was one of the questions I had is, you know, why is it that people are finding that term so egregious in this context? And after having witnessed the occupation myself, I find it hard to understand how you could call it anything else. I mean, perhaps there is some historical benefit to holding the term to the South African context in to be very specific about what that meant. It's not the same. But there are also historical connections between South Africans and Israelis that are of long standing, and there is a clear borrowing of many of the technologies of apartheid and an expansion of those technologies. For example, we saw at a farmer's gate where they had, the Israelis had closed off access to farms that were just across the road, a checkpoint, a line where day laborers, or actually not really day laborers, but people who own farms and their laborers would have to stand and cross. They very much were reminiscent of the movement of laborers in and out of the cities in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in South Africa, that movement was, involved people getting into their employment, but it wasn't even as controlled as the movement we saw in Palestine.
Huh.
Because the movement in Palestine was controlled by the wall, the presence of the huge wall built around the entire city of Jerusalem and also all through the West Bank. And that wall controlled movement everywhere we went. We were in approximately, I think, 8 to 12 cities, and we had to go through many checkpoints. And people in their ordinary day in Palestine are forced to cross those checkpoints. And if you're Palestinian, the treatment at those checkpoints is outrageous. And we witnessed this every single time we went through a checkpoint. We were also told, though we didn't actually go at that hour of the day, that school children go through those checkpoints twice a day to attend school, and they wait sometimes 2 and 3 hours at each point during the day when they're crossing. This kind of treatment, I really find it hard to imagine that we could call it anything else except apartheid. The strategy of separation, from which we derive the name apartheid, is a strategy that was evident everywhere we went. And I was really not as aware of all the different ways in which the segregation was entrenched in everyday life, including inside Israel. And we did also meet with Arabs inside Israel,
uh-huh.
and learned about segregated schools. We also learned about the different legal systems that Palestinians and Jews live under, and and Arab Israelis live under. And I was stunned to find that, for example, a Jewish citizen of Israel is actually charged and will find themselves subject to a different body of law than an Arab citizen of Israel. And an Arab citizen of Israel can actually never be a first-class citizen of Israel because, by definition, they are not Jewish. So these things were astonishing to not only to have learned, because some of that I had read about, but to see in everyday action and to see how blatant the separation was, how clearly this would be understood in everyday life, how children would come to know it before they would know very much else. It is true that there were, as it was pointed out to us several times, that there were no signs on water fountains that said whites only or Jews only. And the absence of those signs is sometimes said to indicate that there is a different set of practices in place that are not apartheid. But when you see the operation of those checkpoints, of the wall, of the roads that are used only for Israelis and the tunnels that are used only by Palestinians, you can come to really no other conclusion.
That's the voice of Professor Gina Dent. She's professor at the University of California, Santa Cruz. We're speaking with her and Professor Emerita Angela Davis about their delegation. Okay, so I'm going to ask Professor Davis about the following statement that we hear frequently, a couple of statements, and I'd like your response. Number one, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. And then number two, Israel is the United States' only partner, strategic partner in that part of the world. When you hear statements like that, Professor Davis, how do you respond?
Well, certainly the part that the U.S. plays in bolstering the racist and Zionist policies of the state of Israel, that role is absolutely central.
Mm.
We had the opportunity to speak with a number of women's groups. We had conversations with young people who were members of Queers for BDS.
Yes.
And we talked about the process of what they call pinkwashing.
Yes.
The representation of Israel as the only true democracy in the region. Certainly the representation of Israel as the most advanced, quote, most advanced social democracy in the region. And, of course, Israel oftentimes uses what it considers to be its more progressive policies regarding women and regarding LGBT communities as a weapon against the Palestinians and as proof that the occupation is something that brings enlightenment to Palestinian people. Now, the members of the organizations that we spoke to continually insisted on the need to think about social justice issues such as gender and sexuality and economic status in conjunction with each other, to use what we what we often call an integrative approach, to use what we often call a feminist approach to the understanding of the relationship between
yes.
sexuality and race and
yes.
class and gender. And that was a very compelling critique of the effort to represent Israel as an advanced democracy. It is true that when you enter certain cities like Tel Aviv and Haifa, you might think you were in another part of the world because of the kind of architecture, the use of Western technological standards and so forth.
Yes.
In this context, I would say that makes the situation even worse. The application of advanced technologies to the forms of repression inflicted on Palestinian people is what was perhaps most surprising to us. I don't know whether we had considered the conjunction of these advanced carceral technologies with the effort to maintain the occupation. And this is what gave us the sense that when we were in Palestine, we were living inside a prison.
That's the voice of Professor Angela Davis speaking about her recent trip to Palestine. So, Gina, let me ask you the same question that I asked Angela. So when you, based on your experience and what you saw, what you observed, what you were able to take in, when you hear that statement, you know, the only democracy in the Middle East applied to Israel, what does that leave you with?
Well, we can use two other democracies, the United States and South Africa, as examples. I think we know that in history there are states that are labeled as democracies that have insufficiently fulfilled that promise. And so the term democracy does nothing to belie the fact that the existence of the state of Israel right now is dependent on the oppression of a huge number of people and the suppression of the state of Palestine. And for that reason, I think it's incredibly important, in drawing on the use of the term apartheid, for African Americans in particular, and this is one of the reasons why some of us were interested in being a part of this delegation, for African Americans in particular to focus on Palestine, because we have a history in our own country and also in relating to the struggle in South Africa of paying attention to this kind of contradiction. And I think the use of the term apartheid, it will be helpful in helping people to really understand what kind of a contradiction we're talking about.
So then in relating your experiences for both of you on this trip, and I'll start with you, Gina, when you think about your experience and what you had to process in going through seeing Palestine under these conditions, what relation does Palestine have to the struggles that we have here, specifically with indigenous and women of color feminists here in this country?
Well, it's been very important for us as feminist scholars to begin to grapple with a lot of the contradictions of the states we are engaged with. And so increasingly, the group of feminists that we were traveling with have been concerned with transnational feminists, feminisms, anti-colonial feminisms. And we often forget that when we're talking about those issues, we should also be talking about the territorial U.S. It was very important for our delegation that one of our members was an indigenous woman from the Minnesota area and Dakota, and she now teaches at the in Canada. But she spoke also in Dakota when we traveled, and it was an important reminder to us and to people we met in Palestine that we are also speaking from a position where we are critical of the continuation of U.S. colonial and imperial practices. And so we shouldn't always treat it as so utterly contradictory that the U.S. supports Israel in the way that it does. I think we need to be critical also about our own environment. And I think transnational feminisms allow us to begin to talk about those continuities across states that encourage us to think about a broader and deeper resistance.
That's the voice of Professor Gina Dent. She's professor at UC Santa Cruz. So as we kind of wind down our discussion here, I'd like to ask you, Angela, what would you, if you had to say something to allies, to activists, but specifically I'd like to hear your statement that you'd like to offer to academics, people in the academy, who may be wavering a bit about the question of Palestine and its relation to what's happening to indigenous and women of color here in the United States, who are a little unclear, who may be a little foggy on things. What would you like to say about that?
Well, you know, first of all, I would say that it's important that people remember the histories of the struggle against racism in the U.S., the struggle against apartheid in South Africa, and the as yet unresolved struggle against colonialism being waged by indigenous people inside the U.S. In the statement, we decided to use a quote by Dr. Martin Luther King, justice is indivisible. And he made this statement in response to those who criticized him for getting involved in the campaign against the war in Vietnam. Mm. His message to the larger world, as well as to black people who were at that moment still intensely involved in the struggle against segregation, his message was that justice is indivisible. Mm. Injustice, anywhere is an assault on justice everywhere.
That's Professor Emerita Angela Davis, professor at UC Santa Cruz. Gina, how about you? What would you like to say to people who may be wavering, unclear, don't understand the relationship about what's happening in Palestine to indigenous and feminist struggles here in the United States?
Well, first of all, I would encourage people to go. It's a part of breaking the silence, and it's a part of moving against the Zionist regime. I knew a lot before I went, but the experience of going was quite extraordinary. So I would encourage academics in particular to take it on as a research object, to do what they do best, and also to form exchanges with Palestinian universities, with students and faculties there. I think that we should all use our research skills to be better informed. It's clear that our media are not informing us in the ways that they should about the conditions in Palestine. And I now, having made this trip, cannot imagine what would cause anyone to waver on this issue. It was so incredibly clear while we were there what a violation it was and how extraordinary in scale this violation was. And we were not even permitted, for example, to go into Gaza. Mm. I want to mention that.
Yeah.
So I want all academics to join us in doing what we do best and in researching the question and in encouraging conversations and encouraging exchange. And I think through that we will help to create the context for the dismantling of the occupation.
That's the voice of Professor Gina Dent, speaking with us about her recent trip to Palestine and specifically about the call to action that was issued from the delegation from Indigenous and Women of Color Feminists. Professor Davis, you get the last word. Any final thoughts as we wrap up today?
Well, I would urge people to find out about the campaign for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Endorse the campaign. Remember that this was instrumental in the dismantling of apartheid in South Africa, and it can assist us in helping the Palestinian people to reach a just and equitable solution to the problems that they face to achieve sovereignty and freedom.
That's Professor Angela Davis, writer, activist, and educator. She's written extensively. My three favorite books of hers, 1980, Women, Race, and Class, 1988, Women, Culture, and Politics, and 2003, the classic, Are Prisons Obsolete? Professor Davis, Professor Dent, thank you so much for joining us today on Arab Talk. It was truly, truly a pleasure speaking with you, and we appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short musical break, and then when we come back, it's going to be BDS. This is Arab Talk on KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM.